Have you ever made the wrong assumption and immediately had to pay for it? Like, not a week later, not a day later, right away. So if we go to these slides, I want to go to the second slide here, if you guys can get to it. Yeah, so this Kike and I, this other guy in Mexico, are putting together a roof, and lots of wind. We're putting the styrofoam insulation down. You can see the duct tape and the mess there, because we're having a huge problem with it. But I was on what's called a purling, like one of those little 1x4s. I was on two of those like this, and I was walking backwards like this, and I'm looking at what I'm doing over here, and I'm not looking at the 10, and I put a foot back like this, and I can feel with my heel the 10. So then I do this, and it was the wrong assumption, right? Because I was right. You can't probably see it because you got to have pretty good eyes, but there's a little bit of a dent just to the left of Kike, and that's because, and there's all the styrofoam smashed right there too. That's because I immediately fell through that roof, and I tried to catch myself like this, so my ribs, there was like a stucco concrete wall there, so my ribs are all bruised and cut up, and my arms all cut up. And the poor people inside, luckily I didn't fall on anybody, the people inside are painting, and there's just this like storm of styrofoam and me like fall into the floor. And then I got back up and took a picture of it, and we put the rest of the roof on, right? We had to repair all the styrofoam. Well, here's the thing. It's an important line for us today. I felt like I was standing on something real. Like I felt something real. I felt that 10. Felt like I was standing on something real, but I wasn't. I was just right on the edge of it. I wasn't standing on something strong. And I immediately paid the price, right? I felt like I was standing on something strong, and I wasn't. Now, that's a scary place to be. I can tell you, like, my brain turned off. I don't even really remember falling, but most of the time in my life where, like, my brain turns off, I don't know if I have the same stories as you guys, but normally involves falling things where I wind up like cut and bruised at the end of it. And I don't really remember the fall. You don't want to have those sorts of moments. Here's the thing in our story today, what we're reading about is that sort of a moment, but in a much more important way. It's Jesus saying, you've touched something real, but you're wrong. You're not actually standing on it. You're not standing on the strong thing. Which is rough to hear from Jesus, right? So we're going to look at that in John chapter 5, if we're going to go to this next slide. If you got a Bible, turn there. If you don't have a Bible, there's some in the pew racks right in front of you. John chapter 5, verse 45 through 47. Just a few verses, but it's going to hit real hard for the folks that are listening to Jesus. John chapter 5, verse 45 is where we're going to start. So he's talking to this group of people who feel like they're connected to God, who are trying really hard to follow God, who really respect Moses, who's like the hero of the Old Testament. And Jesus says this to them, but do not think that I will accuse you before the Father. Talking about God, his Father. Do not think I will accuse you before the Father. Your accuser is Moses, on whom your hopes are set. They had spent their whole life putting into action what they thought Moses said to do. And here Jesus is saying, the very person that you are hoping is going to stand up before God and help you is going to stand up before God and say, this person doesn't deserve to be with you, God. This person lived their life the wrong way, and they should be thrown out. That's what Jesus is saying to these guys. He is going to be your accuser. Moses, like the Ten Commandment guy, it's not Charlton Heston, you know, but like Moses is going to like stand up and be like, these guys should be out. None of us want to hear Moses say that in front of God, right? He says, if you believed Moses, you would believe me. For Moses wrote about me. But since you do not believe what Moses wrote, how are you going to believe what I say? A lot of times around here, we talk about things like don't talk about it, be about it. Because a lot of us just struggle with straight up hypocrisy, right? Like we talk a good game, but we don't do it. That's actually not what this is talking about, though. Today's lesson is about you're doing something, but you're doing the wrong thing, right? Like you're saying you're following Moses, but you're actually not. You're saying you're about this good stuff, but your life is actually evil. This is super scary, right? This isn't the addict who never tries to go to the 12-step program and never tries church and dies with a needle in the arm. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about the guy who got sober and was telling everybody else what they should do, but somehow like missed the boat of what Jesus is all about. Like, that's a pretty scary spot to be at, to have that realization suddenly, like everything I put my hope in, I'm actually on the other side of it. It's actually going to accuse me. Yikes. So here's the deal. Here's the scariest thing for us. I mean, a lot of us don't set our hopes on Moses, but here Jesus is linking himself up of like, they missed Moses. We can miss Jesus. And he says this idea about belief. If you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. But since you do not believe what he wrote, how are you going to believe what I say? So the thing is, it's not like these guys didn't read the stuff that Moses wrote about. And it's not like they didn't do stuff every single day because of what they had read. But if you will read through the Old Testament with the right sort of eyes, you'll see that these legalistic, judgmental guys had like missed what Jesus was all about. They'd missed really big parts of what's in the Old Testament, even though every day they were doing stuff that they thought was right. So here's a scary question for us to face today. Even if you're at the spot where you are trying every day to listen to Jesus and you're trying every day to do something about it, like there's a risk of still missing the boat, right? There's this risk of still not being on the right page. There's this risk of I made Jesus somebody that he's not, and I followed my fake Jesus somewhere that Jesus isn't, right? That's what these guys have done. They'd made Moses into something Moses wasn't. And when they actually got face to face with Moses, Moses was going to be like, everything you did was not the stuff I talked about. We don't want to stand in front of Jesus and have him tell us, I don't know you, and whatever stuff you can brag about, like, that's not the stuff I was about. So I'm going to throw out a few things to you that come from the Gospels. Honestly, if you you know, men's small group this last week read the Gospel of Mark. That was kind of their challenge. They all read that whole Gospel. It's a great challenge to do. If you read one of these Gospels, you'll see, like, man, there's some stuff there that I didn't expect Jesus to say. If you read it closely, you'll think, like, if I'm honest, that doesn't sound right to me. Or, like, I don't know how to take that. Here's the thing, like, are we believing what Jesus says to us? So I'm going to throw out a few things, and I'm asking not just do you believe, like, check a box, but, like, do you really believe it in your heart, right? So these are totally random. Jake picks from the Gospels. You could pick 1,000 different things, right? These are not. Anyways, they're my picks, so let's listen to them. But Mark chapter 2, verse 27, this next little slide. Jesus has a statement about Sabbath. And Sabbath, if you're not familiar with it, you know, it's a term from the Bible, but it's this idea that when God created everything, he blessed a particular day and he rested. And all through the Old Testament, there's a lot of talk about Sabbath and a way to honor God by resting and receiving from God on a day and not being about production. And it's about kind of receiving from God and worshiping God, resting and worshiping. So, Sabbath is not maybe a command in the New Testament, but in Mark chapter 2, verse 27, Jesus talks about the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And one of the things he was saying to the current audience back then was, your whole life should not be about Sabbath and making sure you follow all the rules right. But there's another truth in there, what Jesus is saying. He's saying that God handcrafted Sabbath as a gift for humanity. Like every single week, there's a package with a bow on it from God to Donnie, And it's Donnie's choice, like, does he open it or not? And the same thing comes to Ryan up in the balcony, right? God gives you 7 days, and he actually will give you a day of rest if you'll unwrap it. And you might think, like, well, you don't know my schedule. I have to work sevens. You have to work 7-12s or whatever it might be. I bet if you talked to Jesus about, like, Jesus, I believe you, that you gave this gift of a day a week where I can rest and I can worship. I bet if you asked for it, God would give it to you. I think he's already set it up for you, but I bet he would make sure that you don't starve and your kids don't starve. And I wonder, though, like in our culture where production is so much of who we are, and like the moment we wake up, we're on our phone like scrolling. We have these like massive thumb muscles, right? And it's like this like idea of, I don't want to miss out. This idea of, I'm going to follow this person on Instagram and see all this cool camping equipment or whatever you're into, because we feel like our life consists in an abundance of possessions, even though Jesus says that's not true, right? We have all these beliefs of like, I got to produce, I got to do, I got to be, I got to hurry. And so I wonder, like, do we believe what Jesus said? Do we believe that God made a gift for Richie and it's a Sabbath? And we don't have to take it as like a rule. We don't have to feel guilty about it. But do you just believe that God has a gift for you in that way? Right? So there's a lot of other things you could have picked besides Sabbath. But the reason I picked it today is Christy and I have been doing a Sabbath for a couple years now. We don't do it perfect. We try to take Fridays, though, and try to make it about rest and worship, and we struggle, you know, but we try. And what I'll say is it's really good, and it feels very counter our society. Like, it feels like there's a lot of pressure to, like, be busy all the time and to keep up with everybody. And the more that I've done the Sabbath thing, the more it's like God's worked on my inside condition and, like, gotten rid of some of my, like, hero complex and some of my other gunk that's inside of me. And I realize, like, this is really good. And I also see, like, God's taking care of me and my family, like, in a lot of ways. And I can't really describe it better than, like, saying, like, it's been a gift. I don't feel guilty about it. I just feel like, wow, this was good. I'm glad I took Jesus at his word and did something about it, right? So don't feel guilty about this one, but do you believe it? Do you believe God's given you that as a gift? The next one is maybe a much more important one, much more central. It comes out of the Gospel of John, John 15, the whole chapter, really. But John 15, 5 sums it up well. Jesus talking here to his followers, he says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a person remains in me and I in them, they'll bear much fruit. So I see Eric Gossi nodding his head up there. One of the things I know about Eric is, like, Eric gets a lot out of going for walks with his dog and spending some quality time with Jesus, like, by doing that. For you, whether you like walks, whether you want to do something different, do you really believe that the one thing that matters in getting done every week is that you remain connected in a close relationship with Jesus? Because that's what Jesus says right there. He says, "If apart from me, you can do nothing." So no matter how many, you know, yards of gravel you're trying to get delivered, or no matter how much money you're trying to get into the bank, or no matter how much you're trying to get your kids to be able to sit through a meal in one spot, or whatever you're trying to, like, get accomplished this week, Jesus is saying you can't accomplish anything if you don't stay close to me. Like, do we believe that? Do you really, I mean, we can kind of check it, but, like, I know for me, like, there's a lot of days where my actions and my heart set don't seem to line up with believing that. Like, at the core of me is a bunch of, like, well, I got to check some little box with Jesus, and then I got to get these 17 things done. But what Jesus is saying is, do you really believe me that if you get me right, then good stuff will come out of your life? If you get one thing right, one relationship right, other things will go well. If you get one relationship wrong, you won't accomplish anything. Like, look at your week and think, like, did I really believe that? Before we get to this last slide, I want to mention something to you on it. These kind of ramp up in what I wanted to share with you. I like Sabbath, and I just feel like most of us don't think about it ever, so that's why I brought it up. It's not. This one is so central to who we are as Christians. Like, what makes us different than everybody else in the world? It's our relationship with Jesus. Like, that's the one thing we got that other people don't have. If we get that good, like, we got something to offer, right? This last one, though, is the one that I feel like in the last month, God has put something in me about. So I want to share that with you guys. So this last one is one of our vision passages, and it's Matthew. If we'll go to it on the slide here, Matthew 28, 18 through 20. Jesus says that all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to him. All authority. So what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in justice down the street from you on South Avenue or whatever, like, I just threw that out. But, like, whatever's happening, the one who really has the power to change anything is Jesus. Now, he gives us a lot of free will, and he lets us hurt each other a lot, okay? But he has all authority. He gives us a mission right in the middle of these two promises. His mission is to go and be disciple makers, is what I put up there, to kind of make it one word. Make disciples, put it in two words. But he defines a disciple. And sometimes we get confused. What does that mean? He defines it. He defines it in two ways. He says, this is somebody who gets baptized into the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So what that means is somebody who hasn't been baptized says, I care about this so much, I'm willing to go do something that's this ceremony, right? Everybody knows whether they've been the bride or groom at a wedding or not, right? Like, you know, you don't do that ceremony without some intention. Baptism is like that sort of a ceremony. It's a ceremony that kicks off this very committed relationship that's supposed to last, right? And then he defines a second part of disciple making. He says, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. So you don't get to really say, like, well, I'm done, I'm finished. You know, like Jerry, Sue, or whatever got baptized. What he says is, like, nope, we're not done making disciples until that person's been taught to follow Jesus in action, right? So that's what a disciple maker is. So that's our, if we believe that as Christians, like, what's the purpose of your life? It's to help other people find that new life and really follow Jesus. The last part is probably the best part. Jesus says, and I'm with you always into the very end of the age. Like, there's no better promise than that. There's nothing better than that. Jesus says, like, if you want to follow me, I will stick with you. Think about your life. Think about who you were best friends with when you were 7. Think about who you were best friends with when you were 14. Think about that person you had a crush on when you were 19. Think about whoever's most important to you today. That's probably 4 different people, right? And even if that person that you love so much today loves you back just as much, like, they can't guarantee that they will be here even tomorrow, right? Like, we just don't have the power or the authority to always be there. It's not even always just an issue of love. Sometimes it's just an issue of, like, we can't beat cancer or whatever it is, right? Jesus has the authority to say, like, I'm going to be right there with you. If you go do this, I will be right there with you. There's never a day that it won't happen. Putin or whoever, like, nobody can stop that promise. So I told you God said something to me about this, or he didn't, like, speak it. I'm not Moses. I didn't get, like, a verbal thing. But I got an impression, a memory of a time I was in Mexico. So this is me in Mexico. This is pre-Chrissy, right? You know, so the hair is crazy. And I'm trying to level this foundation. We'd have these boards and a little string line that I put up. And if you know me very well, I'm not very good at leveling things or making things straight. So this was a struggle for me. But the very first time I ever had the responsibility to do a foundation pour and to be in charge, I was probably 20 years old, had a group of about 20 people, cement mixer. I can remember it vividly. Like, I could get in a car with you right now, and in, like, 24 hours, we could be in the same spot that I was in. Like, I remember exactly where I was at. The pour was going terrible. It's buckets of concrete coming down the hill. I had to literally tell him, like, just keep the mixer on idle and stop bringing me concrete, because, like, it's just a disaster. You know, like, it's definitely not level. I definitely can't trust the string line that I put up, and I don't know what to do. And it was enough of a mess that somebody else that was working there, you know, got on their bicycle and went and got Kurt, who's, like, the boss at the time. Kurt Redema, who, like, an Iowa guy. Daniel knows him, strangely. So here's the thing about Kurt Redema is Kurt came, I'd been there for hours trying to get this thing right. Got wet concrete, I mean, maybe not hours with the actual wet concrete, but got this concrete drying, super stressed, and I like can't get it done. If you've ever had that pressure, like 20 people working under you, and you got something that's on a timetable, and you realize, like, the fact that you and all 20 people realize is, like, you can't get it done. Like, that's the worst feeling ever, right? At that point, you don't have any pride left to get hurt. When Kurt shows up, and he's standing about where the baptistry is, like, up above the ground because of the road, and he's able to say, like, that part is high, and that part is low. Like, he's able to just tell us what to do. Like, there's no pride left to be hurt. You just start doing what to fix it, right? And Kurt got down into the mess and helped me fix it. And the foundation was much better probably than this one turned out that I did a year or two later by myself, right? I guess that's a long story. Here's the image Jesus gave me about the Great Commission in Maywood. If Kurt had showed up to me in Mexico and told me to build any building, and he said, we got the money to do it, and I'll go build it with you, I would have felt good about it. I would have felt relieved, right? Because we built some stuff that was way over my head, but Kurt was just spectacular at construction in a way that I, like, never will be. And as long as he was there with me, like, I just didn't feel any pressure. I just felt like, of course we can get it done. Like, Kurt's here. Like, as silly as that sounds, Kurt's not Superman, so I'm sure we could have run into stuff that we wouldn't have been able to do, but what Jesus put on my heart is, like, that's the sort of attitude we should have towards the Great Commission. Like, someone so much better than we could ever be is saying, like, I've got all the authority to get it done, and I'm going to be right there with you, but let's go get it done. So if you believe this, then that means you better know somebody who's not been baptized that you're trying to help get to know Jesus. If you don't know anybody that's not been baptized, it's hard to really carry this out, right? If you're not interacting with anybody like that. If you're not helping anybody grow in their obedience to Jesus, it's hard to say that you're a disciple maker, right? If you're not having some sort of talks where it's like, hey, stop lying to your wife, or hey, this is, you know, whatever it needs to be, right? But where you're helping somebody grow towards Jesus, right? So I got one more story for you, and then we're going to conclude with a little benediction here. But to set up this story, I want to tell you one more thing about this passage when it comes to belief. Because it's so scary, this passage is to me. If you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me. But since you do not believe what he wrote, how are you going to believe what I say? Like, it's so scary. But here's the thing I keep seeing coming up in the Bible when I think about belief this week. It's the people that really believe in God, they seek God. It's like Hebrews 11, this great chapter on faith. It says in verse 6, like, that people that have faith in God, that they're certain that he exists. And the other thing, not just certain he exists like a fact, they believe that he earnestly rewards those who seek him. Like, do you really believe that? Like, if I go after God with my whole heart, there's going to be something good in it for me. Like, if you believe that, then you're going to be waking up trying to go spend time with him. You're going to be going on walks with your dogs, like, trying to spend some time with him. You're going to be trying to say, there's something in this that's good if I seek him. I was just reading this morning, Psalms, I think 78, and it was talking about when the people would forget about God and God would let some hard things come their way, then they finally would start to seek him again. Then they would remember that he's their rock and he's their redeemer. And no matter what you've done to mess up, no matter how you got into the room today, like, Jesus will be your rock and Jesus will be your redeemer. That means he'll pay for the mess that you made and he'll set you back in a good spot. Right? You don't have to fix the mess of the past. You just have to say, I'll go with you, Jesus, and I'll stick with you. I'll do it your way from here. You know, help me do it your way, right? Okay, so here's my final story. It's about seeking. So another place I could drive you to that's just on Nolan Road, it's a lot closer than Mexico. But when I was a kid, the way my family was set up, we did things kind of frugally, or like cheaply, I guess is another way to put that maybe, but I didn't think of it that way as a kid, though. I thought frugal is a better word. But, like, we had certain ages, I think it was 2 or 3 ages as a kid, where you got to have birthday parties with your friends, right? So I think it was, I can't even remember the ages for sure, but like one was elementary school and one was a teenager, and there might have been one in the middle. So like my brother, my sister, and I, like it would happen at different points, but like when you turned this certain age, you knew like you got a real birthday party. The rest of the time it was like cake with the family, which is still good, but the birthday party I had in elementary school, it was down at this place on Nolan Road, and we had this little party room area, and the cake's happening, whatever, presents are happening. The final present they bring out to me is this box that as a kid, like I had to go stand, I think I had to stand on the chair. It was like bigger than my torso, like just to like get up to the box, right? And I open the, and you get super excited when you're like elementary school kid and they bring out this huge box. So I'm like opening it up and it's full of these like packing peanuts. And so I just start like throwing packing peanuts all over the place. And there's a lot of packing peanuts in this box. I just keep like digging and digging and digging. And then my parents start to kind of freak out. It takes me a while to recognize that. And I just keep digging and it seems like there's like nothing in there. What I don't realize is what I have thrown behind me. So what I'd thrown behind me was this, which fortunately was in like this like nice case. So this is a George Brett rookie card. It's by far like the best baseball card I've ever received, like by far. So it's from, so it's 1975 tops is when it came, when it was actually, so as a kid, like this was worth so much more than all the other baseball cards I had, and I literally threw it behind me and like had to go get it off the floor. But cool side story on that. Sorry to take you on memory lane for a second. We have a couple minutes. So like the reason my parents gave me that, like we're the type of family that's not doing very many birthday cards. And at the time, I haven't kept up with it. But at the time, that card was worth like $250 or something. Like, it was worth way more than what my parents spent on me for birthday presents. The reason my dad gave me that card is my dad was the type of person who, he would get a lot of cards when people were brand new, right? And he would hold on to them. And he'd held on to that since George Brett was a rookie and then gave it to me at that birthday party, right? And I got to see George Brett his final season at Kauffman up in like the nosebleed seats with my dad. Anyways, there's like a lot of goodness to that. Even though it's a piece of paper, like I get that. Like it's just a piece of paper. But to me, it's like super special. But here's what I want. Here's why I tell you that whole story is when they brought out that box, I had no idea what was in the box. But it's my birthday and I have kind, like not cruel parents. So I just like dove in. And I had no doubt about it, like I was seeking something good. And when things were not what I expected, when there's just more and more packing peanuts, I didn't say, well, I guess this is all there is. I guess I should just start eating packing peanuts or something, like getting sick, right? There was this idea of like something's wrong because there has to be something good here. There's a treasure here, even though I don't immediately find it. And my parents were smart enough, that, like I actually forgot to bring this and Chrissy had to bring it. And she's like, oh, this is like a nice case, you know, like that's like when she got it out. She was not expecting, like, because baseball cards normally come in like flimsy little things. So they'd put it in something that even when I threw it across the room, right, it like didn't hurt it. You can believe that God will give you a treasure that is good if you will seek him. Like, approach your relationship with God that way. Like, open in that box. You don't know exactly what God's going to give you that day. God has something good for everybody who seeks him. The best gift that he's given us is Jesus, right? And Jesus is saying, if you want me to be close to you, like, let's go do it together, right? Let's go help some other people get new life together. Like, Jesus literally could do it by himself. And he wants you to come with him. And don't miss out on that. Like, don't miss out. Like, whatever you thought about, you knew about Jesus before you came in here, realize, like, read the Bible, pray, listen. This idea of, like, God has something good for me. Like, if your relationship with Jesus isn't defined by, like, wow, God is good to me. Jesus is so good. Then, like, you're missing what Christianity is at its heart. It's about this good relationship with Jesus that changes everything. The people that missed it, Moses had that good relationship with God. The people that missed what Moses wrote about, like, they turned it into something different. It wasn't a good relationship with God. It was something that was like a shell of that. If you have a shell of Christianity, like, you can crack it today, right, and be done with it. Because those packing peanuts, I left those on the floor. I'm assuming, I don't know who cleaned those up, right? The packing peanuts didn't matter, right? I knew what was the treasure when I had it. And if your life with Jesus doesn't feel like a treasure right now, like, you don't have it. Like, keep pulling into Jesus and say, like, I want this to be the best thing. I want this to be way more than I expected. So I want to pray a benediction on us. And this comes from Moses. This comes from the guy that Jesus is talking about here. There's one psalm, I believe, anyways, if I'm right, one psalm in the book of Psalms that's written by Moses or attributed to Moses. And Moses starts by talking about how God's people have had their dwelling place in God, right? It kind of echoes John 5, or I guess it's written before, but kind of similar feel to John 15 of this dwelling with God. But then he asks for a blessing on the people of God. And I want to ask that blessing on us, that as we're trying to help people find new life in Jesus, that God would establish what we're doing, but also that God would rest with us, that he'd dwell with us. So if you guys will bow your heads, I want to pray this blessing from Moses on us. May the favor, may the beauty of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.